stressed out, you don't enjoy. And when you don't enjoy, you don't achieve. So, whatever course, whatever activity, see if you can put some sort of fun in it. You have to do assignments and homework. And please, because the Australian education system is stupid. And I say that having been an educator myself. Ever since I learned from one of the monks who was here for a while, Mudito, he was from Finland. And if the Finnish education system is one of the best in the world, when they assess people's understanding of things like maths and English and science, they always come in the top three in the world. So it's a great education system. And you may be surprised to know that in Finland, you don't start school until you are seven. They don't have the grade ones and grade twos. So until 7 years of age, you're expected to go playing with your friends. And even better, in Finland, they never ever have homework. It's banned. So when you finish school, you finish school. How many would like to migrate to Finland? That's quite cool, isn't it? Why does that work? It's because they understand you don't put pressure on people. And if you put so much work on you, basically your brain stuffs up. But unfortunately, because of your karma, you are stuck here in Australia. There are worse places. I was just recently in Hong Kong, and the Chinese system is apparently even worse than Singapore, mainland China. And many kids there are really psychologically stressed. Australia is much better, but still it's not good enough. So you have to deal with that. So how can you deal with the stress at school and still not get hassled, not get into trouble with your parents and the teachers? This is how to do it. Just a couple of little stories here. Number one, this is a story about stress. How heavy is this bottle of water? The answer is, the longer I hold it, the heavier it feels. After 30 seconds, I will start to ache. After 1 minute, I will be in pain. After 2 minutes, I'll be in agony and a very stupid monk. So what should I do when this gets uncomfortable to hold? Yes, so easy and sensible. So when you're on your computer doing an assignment and your brain gets stuffed up and you can't produce anything, you can't think of any answers or any sentences to write, what should you do? Put it down. Stop the homework. And if you rest your brain for 1 or 2 minutes or 5 or 10 minutes, when I pick this up now, it actually feels lighter because my arm has rested. The trouble when you're doing homework that sometimes you don't do it efficiently. Sometimes you're on a computer screen, ideas don't come up, solutions to problems, they don't arise. Why? It's because your brain is tired. Sometimes if you work late at night, you are just that close to being brain dead. You know what I mean? Ideas don't come up. You're exhausted. You're tired. Don't keep pushing. Don't keep staring, thinking that the more time you spend on the assignment, eventually you'll get it done. Instead, take a break. Take a rest. Meditation is the best way, but if you're so restless you can't do meditation, listen to some of your favourite music for 5 minutes. Only 5 minutes, don't get into it too long. Relax! And after you've rested your brain, then you go back to the assignment, and ideas come up. And it becomes much easier. 5 or 10 minutes spent relaxing, you make up afterwards by getting, say, an essay which would have taken you 2 hours done in 1 hour. Remember, homework is all about efficient use of your brain, not just pushing, pushing, pushing. And the next thing which I taught this at a Jewish school in Western Australia, and afterwards, the principal sent me a letter of thanks, personal. Thank you so much, because we became the top school that year, in the year 12s. Or because a Buddhist monk taught the kids about how to do exams. So easy. Do you have to do exams and tests? Do you stay up late the night before, studying? Get out books in the morning, studying. That is stupid. You know enough already. You just got to make sure your brain is prepared so it can produce the answers on the exam paper. So my advice to all the year 12s in this school, the day before the exams, relax, go and see a movie, go and have a walk, go to the beach and do some surfing or anything, but don't pick up the book. So that means when you go to bed the night, get your parents to cook you your favourite meal, so you can get a really good night's sleep before the exam. And then when you go to the school to do the exams in the morning, you're relaxed. Your brain is ready to perform. It's had a day off. And they followed that advice, and they got the best school award for the year 12s that year. Does that make sense to you? Because it is thinking outside the box. Some people are stupid. Day before exam, exam's coming tomorrow, study, 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 study. And all you do is you get tense and tired. You get worried. The anxiety stops you performing to a really high level. So try that. That is how thinking outside the box works. But, number three little piece of advice. If you want to do really well at school and do less work, just the optimum, wouldn't it be great? Do less work and get better grades. It's not that hard. I've been coming to Melbourne for many years, over 30 years. Many years ago, there was a Sri Lankan girl here who was, I think it was at Monash, studying medicine, and every year she got the ducks, you know, the top award in medicine. And she came out after med school absolutely top. And people wondered how on earth she did that, because she hardly went to any lectures, never went to any tutorials, and would always come out top. And the reason was that as a young girl in Sri Lanka, before her family moved to Australia, she learned a little bit of meditation. So much so, she was so good at it, that when she read a book, a medical book, she would read it with such a quiet mind. She wasn't thinking anything when she read the book, which meant that she recalled everything. She only had to read the medical book once, or maybe twice at most. So she had perfect understanding of it. And she said when she went to the exams, she read the question without any anxiety, just very peacefully, and wrote the first thing which came into her head after she read the question. And that's why she always got correct answers. She was using brain training to do so well. And if you just contemplate it, your brain is like a sponge. And if your sponge is wet and damp, it can't soak up much moisture. But if your sponge is absolutely dry, it can soak up much more. If your brain is really quiet, it's not thinking, but it's listening. What these days your parents call mindfulness. You're having a photograph taken, so smile. Smile for the camera. Okay. Cameras are fake. But if you can be like a dry sponge, in other words, be so calm and pay real full attention. Really pay attention. Then you recall everything. You don't need to waste so much time hearing it over and over again, or reading it twice or three times and still forgetting it. It's a basic psychology memory technique, so you can learn information with very little effort. Listen fully. And then, when you have to let the teacher or the examiners know, when you have to get it out and write it down, you will always find the first answer is usually the correct one. So don't doubt it. This can't be right. No, write it down. Because your brain is now being used almost like in autopilot. When you get involved and you start, this can't be right, this can't be right, that's when you always stuff up and get answers wrong. So that way, when you know how your brain works, that is how you can get much better results with less work and less worry. Oh, what joy. And I don't know what you want to do in this life of yours, but sometimes you have to go through the motions of going to school and doing your year 12s. But, you know, if that doesn't work out for you, it doesn't matter at all. Because life is not about passing exams. It's much more than that. You know, one of the most important things is learning how to be confident. Are you confident? Do you think that you are a good person? If not, why not? One thing I've found, you know, being an educator, you, every one of you here, can do whatever you want if you have that confidence. Only for 1 year I was a school teacher, but I did an experiment. Maybe it was a bit unfair. I was teaching math, and I asked the teachers in my math class, you know, who came bottom of that class the year before. They said, that boy over there, he's hopeless. And I wanted to find out for myself whether it was the case, the truth, that just some people just cannot do math. So I was his teacher for 1 year, maybe two or three lessons a week. And after every lesson, I'd always go to his desk. Do you understand that? Anything I can help you with? Even during the lessons, I would go to him. I would focus on him, giving him extra time, encouraging him, building him up. And I couldn't believe how successful the experiment was. He was bottom the year before. After I taught him, he became top in math. He couldn't believe it himself. But he came top. It was only a matter, somehow somebody told him he couldn't do math. He believed it. And I told him, no way, you can do whatever you like. And I encouraged him, built him up, and he succeeded. In any football team, it's the coach who's the most important. They usually get paid the most money. Because it's the coach tells people, you can do it, you can achieve, you can beat the other side. If you get a high motivational coach, the team wins. So, you need a coach. This afternoon, that's me. So you can do whatever you want in life. I don't know if I heard today, last night, one of the kids said he wants to go to Harvard. Why not? It's possible. If you believe in it, if you want it, you can make it happen. That is how the brain works. So, that's what we mean by thinking outside the box. You put yourself in a box. You believe what other people say you're capable of. And you convince yourself you're not good at this, you're not good at that. Don't believe that. Get outside that box. And then you can do whatever you want. Amazing, the potential of a person who believes in themselves. Novelty number two. Don't just go and do what other people do in this world. Just becoming rich or famous is stupid. So, but whatever you want to do, if you want to travel the world, if you do want to go and do something really meaningful, like, you know, do some environmental repair of this planet, if that's what really motivates you, find that out. And don't let anybody stop you pursuing what really motivates you in this world. Get out there and do it. You can, if you believe in yourself and follow those dreams. But make it a good dream, not a stupid dream. World domination is not a good idea. But other stuff really is. And how do you achieve those things? Don't just do what other people do. You listen to what teachers or experts say. But you take it further. There's one of my heroes. I would have passed him by when I was at Cambridge. There's a guy, you won't know his name, but his name was Brian Josephson. And he developed this mechanism for supercomputers. And this guy, he developed that when he was just a postgraduate, no PhD yet. And everybody told him it was wrong, it wouldn't work. And even the expert who had two Nobel Prizes in physics says this Brian Josephson was a stupid. He got it wrong. But this guy, Brian Josephson, he stood his ground, he argued and argued for years until somebody finally did an experiment and proved that Brian Josephson was right and this so-called expert was wrong. And so Brian Josephson got his Nobel Prize. Those are the sort of people I like. They really do think outside the box. And all the experts say you're wrong, but But they believe in themselves and they just keep on going and they don't stop. They're the ones who push this world forward and make it a better, more livable place. So, you be one of those. Why not? You have an idea and don't let anybody say it doesn't work. That was something which I learnt going to a great university like Cambridge. You had an idea. You know, no one ever said it won't work. I never heard that. They said, give it a try. Who knows? Out of 100 ideas people had, 99 of those were absolutely wrong and they did not work. And the university wasted money. But the 1 out of 100 ideas which did work, that is where they pushed progress further and people got prizes. And that's with each one of you. Never think it won't work. Give it a try. Because that's where great breakthroughs in science, great breakthroughs in IT, great breakthroughs in life happen. When people say, you're mad. You're crazy. It won't work. But you refuse to be put in that box. And you keep pushing. Which means you do break through. And that is what life is all about. So, I have said a few words to you. Now, how about some questions back? Does that make any sense? If you want to create a new world, don't just do the same things your parents did. Do it better. Never stand in the shadows of experts. They say stand on their shoulders. Take it further. Don't just do the same old stuff. Yeah?
Making your mind think that you can do something and how it makes you sort of do it, does that apply to physical things as well, such as like illness or like injury?
Oh, absolutely. That, look, there was one of the professors of medicine at the Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney. This was Professor, the head honcho in Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney. He was about to retire. He'd been in the business all his life. And I got this from one of the Buddhist doctors in Sydney, quite a few years ago now. He said this man welcomed him when he was starting medical school. He gave the opening address to the new intake of medical students. And he started his address by saying, welcome to Royal Prince Alfred Medical School. 50% of what we're going to teach you in the next 4 years is wrong. My problem is, said this professor, I'm not sure which 50% it is. That is a scientist. Always willing to question everything. And thereby, you take it further. So, what you can do, what you can't do, you don't know which 50% it is. Give it a try. And with physical problems, there's so many amazing people who have got some physical disability and they say, you can't do this, and they do it. They're inspirations because they break those barriers of what people say you can't do. And you just go and do it. You know, that's so satisfying. When you actually do something and say, you can't do that, and you show them wrong. It's not just satisfying for you, you're opening the doors for so many other people who come in behind you. Break down those barriers. And that's physical, or even like sporting. Look, it says the great coach is the one who can make you believe you can do it. Yes, you need a lot of training. Yes, you know, you need some physical stuff as well. But one of the great experiments I remember seeing when I was at Cambridge was they took a guy and they put him under hypnosis. Under hypnosis, they touched his arm with a 4-inch nail on the end of a stick. They just touched him. But they hypnotized him to believe that that nail was red hot. And so he believed it was really burning hot. It was just ordinary room temperature. And so when they touched his arm, he screamed in pain. I could accept that if you believe it's burning, because you've been hypnotized to think so, then, you know, you scream. But what I never expected to see was a blister come up. That nail, only at room temperature, burnt his skin. There was a physical effect, just because he believed it was hot. A blister actually formed. That was one of the first times I understood how powerful belief, thought, the mind actually is. It wouldn't burn anything. It was only, what, 80, 90 degrees centigrade, that nail. But it burned his skin, because he believed it would. So if such belief could actually create a blister, why can't it heal a cancer? Why can't it reduce a tumor? Why can't it make a wound heal really fast? Or knit bones together which are fractured, which aren't supposed to knit so fast? The mind does interact with the body. And this is one of the great areas where medicine and basically Buddhism can interact for huge benefit. Power of the mind. You saw that demonstrated with the experiment with the nail. How much more can we do? This is the point. If you believe you can't do it, then you won't. If you believe you can, maybe you will. Give it a try. And I think that was one of the ethos at the university I went to. That's why it's very famous. People were encouraged. Yeah, you can. Do it. And that encouragement was amazing. Thank you. Does that answer the question, or do you want to come back? Okay. Somebody else. It's all right to ask questions. Because, you know, that's where a lot of learning comes from. Unfortunately, in your education system, you just sit at your desk and a school teacher just tells you what to believe. Education is not really interactive. Can you argue with your teachers at school and say, "Teacher, that is wrong"? Does that mean your teachers always say the right thing? Of course not. So why can't you argue? A lot of times is when we have argument, discussions, debates. That's when we take knowledge much further. And that's also where the teacher can sometimes see things from a different angle. A teacher's always right. Is Ajahn Brahm always right? What? No, he's not. Stop it. Thinking outside the box. If you haven't heard this story before, I don't know what you've been doing in your Dhamma school. Surely you know the story of the elephant and the 7 blind men. If you don't, here it comes again. Very quickly. 7 blind men, blind since birth, and never seen an elephant before, heard the name elephant, and they wanted to find out what an elephant was. So they all approached an elephant. One of the blind men felt the elephant's tail, another felt a leg, another the body, another the head, another the trunk, one the ears, and the other one the tusks. And after they spent a lot of time feeling just one part of the elephant, then they were asked, "What is an elephant?" And the one who felt the tail said, "It's a fly whisk. That's what an elephant is, a type of fly whisk. You know, you use to keep the flies, the mosquitoes away in Asia." "No way! That's stupid, you idiot. Where were you born? That can't be a fly whisk. It's a tree trunk," said the guy who felt the legs. "A tree trunk? It's round and big, too big to be a tree trunk," said the man who felt the body. "You're an idiot. It's a rock. I can feel it. It's certainly a rock." "A rock," said the man who felt the ears. "It's one of those fans which people use. It's not a tree trunk or a fly whisk. You know, you're all nutcases." "Tree fans," said the one who felt the head. "It's a water pot." "It can't be," said the one who felt the tusks. "It's too hard to be a water pot. It's the plough which the farmers use to dig the earth." "You're all crazy, uneducated, imbeciles, nincompoops," said the guy who felt the trunk. "It's a snake." And of course, you could understand that everyone was right according to their experience. But why is it that we argue with one another? "Hey, elephant's a snake." "No, it can't be. It's a water pot." "No, it can't be. It's a tree trunk." Instead of arguing, wise people sit down and combine their knowledge. And then the seven blind men will agree. An elephant is this huge rock on four tree trunks with a fly whisk on the backside. At the front of the rock, high up a bit, is a water pot with two fans on either side. Underneath the two fans is two ploughs with a snake in the middle. Now that's not a bad description of an elephant for someone who will never see it. So thinking outside the box means listening to other people's experience of their box and combining their experiences and our experiences, so we've got a much bigger box to live in. Not just my box, but our box. That is actually how wisdom grows. But I don't know if you've heard the story of the seven blind elephants. If you heard that story, seven blind elephants who heard the word man, man, man. But they had never seen a man before. Heard their name. They'd been blind since birth. But they heard the story, you know, of the seven blind men feeding an elephant. So the only way we can find out what a man is to find one. We'll each find a man, and we'll feel it, and then we'll come back and combine our experiences. So the elephants, the blind elephants, all went out to find a man to feel it. And when they came back, they all agreed, a man is flat like a hamburger patty. Because that's the only way an elephant can feel something, squash. That's a joke. Men are flat, girls too. If an elephant feels you, you're flat. But that's a nice way of actually thinking outside the box by listening to what other people say. Never ever think you're right. You got part of the truth. Listen to other people and then your box gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So what you live in, many other people could enjoy that. What are you doing to that poor guy's head? You're feeling it. You must be blind and finding out what a young man is. Very good. Yeah. So does that make sense to you? So that's why cooperation in life is more important than competition. When we cooperate, we can go much further. So you know the old story of the blind man and the lame man? They met together and they realized the blind man can't go anywhere, he can't see where he's going. And the man with no legs can't walk anywhere. So they decided to cooperate. The guy with no legs was raised onto the, but with good eyes, was raised onto the shoulder of the man with no eyes. So I can see where you're going. You can actually do the walking. And so, together, they could go anywhere and see anything, as long as they cooperated. I don't know if you heard the story, too, of the man who was lost in the desert for many days. He was lost in the desert, and he was so dehydrated. He was crawling in the sand. He hadn't had any water for days. And the heat was so strong that he realized he wouldn't have that much longer to live. And as he was crawling on the sand, in the distance he thought he saw something in the horizon coming up to him. He thought it was a mirage, because as it came closer, it looked to be like a man with a dog sled. And he thought, this is crazy. What's a man with a dog sled doing in the middle of the desert? And he thought the heat must be frying his brain. He's hallucinating. But as this mirage came closer, he could see there were six husky dogs pulling a sleigh with a man in fur coat driving it. He thought, I'm really insane. This must be a mirage. But as it came even closer, he could hear the dogs barking. And he realized it was real. It wasn't a mirage. And so he saw this Eskimo on the dog sleigh. And he said, thank goodness, I'm saved. I've been lost in this desert for days. And the Eskimo replied, and you think you're lost? It's a joke! What's an Eskimo and a dog sled doing in a desert? They belong in the Antarctic somewhere. Or the Arctic. It's a joke. Come on, ha ha ha. Make the monk feel happy. Okay, come on, I need some interaction now. Thinking outside the box. So what do you want to achieve in life? Yeah?
If you've thought outside the box and like made something new, how do you know if it's like wrong or not, like it doesn't work?
If it creates happiness, and if it's something like an invention, you soon find out if it works or not. If it goes bang, like many stuff which I saw at Cambridge went bang. But no one actually told you off. They just gave you another piece of equipment. Try again. They were worthwhile sacrificing lots of equipment because every now and again it would actually work. Which was amazing. You know, in this place, the way we're taking around these old laboratories, the old Cavendish laboratory, and there, they took you to the room where the fellow who discovered the electron did his experiment, where Rutherford split the atom, where this guy discovered lasers. And you wondered, all these mad scientists in these corridors over in the Cavendish laboratory, what other crazy experiments they were doing. What other mad inventions were they getting up to? And that was, to me, really cool. Most of those scientists locked away in his little rooms along these corridors of this famous laboratory were really out of their heads. They were mad. But they were still just allowed to carry on the research, because every now and again one of them would invent something new, and that was worth it. So, to be a great inventor, you have to be a bit crazy. Do you pass the crazy test yet? It's not really crazy, it's just you don't fit into the box which other people make for you. They think you can't be done. You demand your right to be different, to live and think outside the box. That's a fun place to exist, and many other people respect that. Invent. Do it a different way. And you know it's right because there's something inside you feels you're going in the right direction. It's an idea. You can't really prove it yet, but it feels right. Your intuition, which each one of you have, knows it's going in the right direction. There was, when I was at university, I couldn't afford to go on holidays. But I liked meditating even then, so I would go out into the mountains of Scotland on my vacation. And one beautiful summer's day, I went with a friend. He was the warden of the local youth hostel. We went a walk up one of the mountains. And after getting to the top of the mountain, it was a beautiful view, a lovely day. I asked him, let's go on to the next mountain. And he said, no, one mountain's enough for me. So I went home, and I went up to the next mountain. And as I climbed the next mountain by myself, I saw some clouds come in from the sea. They came in much faster than I expected. And I was just, a short distance from the top of the mountain. And these clouds just came down so fast. If you think the Melbourne weather changes so quickly, this was twice or three times as fast. And I was enveloped in mist, which was so thick I couldn't see the end of my hand through the mist. And I was on top of the mountain alone. And I heard stories, true stories, of people who'd been lost for days in that mist. And I thought, all you need to do is to turn around, retrace your steps the way you came and get back. And that was one of the first time I realized human beings don't have a sense of direction. Dogs and cats do, but not us. Our species just relies on Google Maps, TomToms, and all this other stuff. Because I thought I was retracing my steps, but later on I found I'd gone totally the opposite direction. Because I came literally one step and I wouldn't be here today. There was this huge vertical cliff going way down. One more step and I'd have fallen over. And I checked in the maps and it was totally the opposite direction. There's only one cliff like that there on that mountain. And it was totally the opposite direction I thought I was going. And that's when I got scared. You could die up here. And so, I used my science. And this is actually how you know you're going in the right direction. Simple thing. I needed to get down from that mountain. Because the mist only goes to the top of the mountain. If you can go down low enough, you get underneath the mist. You can see where you are and you won't fall over any cliffs. So, how can I get down the mountain? Simple piece of science. The law of gravity. Water flows downhill. So I found a tiny stream, and it didn't matter which way it went, I would follow it. zigzagging down the mountain, another little stream joined it, got a bit bigger, zigzagging all over the place, but I would follow it, not missing it, because I knew it would take me down, 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 down. And soon it took me down below the mist. It was a long way I'd come around the mountains, but now I could see, and I could walk back to safety. And I always use that, even now. You know you're going in the right direction, that your invention, your way of thinking is good, because it leads you into good places. It makes the world a kinder, happier place, more efficient place, a better place in which to live. You know you're going in the right direction. You may not be able to see too far, but you know it's going in the right direction. Like following the water downhill. That saved my life. Literally. So that's what intuition is. You can't see too far, but you know it's going in the right direction, the right place. If so, follow it. Thank you for that question. Any other questions? You got a cold? Sniffs. How do you overcome colds? This goes on to the question about even medicine and sickness. After finishing Cambridge, I went up to Durham University. The only reason was, that's where my girlfriend was. So I wasn't born a monk, okay? So I went up there. And that was right up the north of England. And that was really cold and miserable. And one day I had a terrible flu. So I never went to any lectures that morning. I was in the bed of this student house. Feeling terrible, sneezing, all this disgusting stuff coming out of my nose, all this green stuff coming out whenever you coughed, your eyes watering, feeling like euthanasia might be a good idea. But I was by myself. And then this knock, that someone rang the doorbell. And when I tried to say, get away from here. They kept on ringing it. So in my pajamas, I staggered to the door. What do you want? And they say, we've got a parcel. For my old name, for I was Ajahn Brahm, was Peter Betts. We've got a parcel for Mr. Peter Betts. That's me. And I remembered what it was. It was a machine which played my vinyl records. The only way you could get music in the 70s. In those days, it was even more complicated than an iPod. More complicated than a Walkman. This, you had three or four boxes you had to connect together. And these vinyl discs, you put on the top of one of them, it'd go round and round and put the, whatever it was called on the top, and it would make the music for you. I had sent it from my home in London, and now it had arrived. I was so excited that even though I had a fever and felt terrible, I took these about three or four boxes up into my bedroom. I unpacked them. I connected it all together. I plugged in the electricity. I put on my first vinyl record, which happened to be Jimi Hendrix. He was my hero. It's rock music. I don't know if you know it, Jimi Hendrix. But that really turned me on. And when I played that first track, it took me about half an hour to connect it all together. I noticed something strange. Nothing was coming out of my nose. I wasn't coughing anymore. My eyes weren't watering. My fever had gone and I felt good. My cold or flu totally vanished. Jimi Hendrix had cured my fever. And that was really strange. Why did that happen? Because of excitement, happiness. You forgot about your sickness, your cold. It was a real cold. And it went in half an hour. Simply because of happiness and joy. Amazing just how you can take a sickness and sap it away. Why? If any of you are really interested in neuroscience, that is a great area. How does this work? The nature of the mind and sickness. It's brilliant stuff. Because that really helps a lot of people. When it comes to hospitals, sometimes there's too many sick people, not enough hospitals or doctors. That's why sometimes your grandma might be sick, they try and get her out of hospital as quick as possible, so someone else can take the bed. Almost like push you out. So we need other ways of dealing with the sickness in our world today. Not just drugs. Not just operations, but also using the power of the mind. Zap. Shall I tell you something else which is really cool? Don't usually tell many people this. That there are monks who have powers. Real ones. And how cool can that be? This one monk, I don't mind, usually keep this quiet until a person passes away, because we don't want people to be freaks. But this is one monk, I never saw it myself, reliable sources, people I've known for a long time, they say, yes, this is real. This monk, he was an Indonesian monk, but he was teaching a meditation class in Thailand. Every Sunday, people go to this class of meditation. And one of the people who told me this said they had their eyes closed meditating and they felt something weird going on. Something strange. You can feel it. This is not right. And they broke the rules and they opened their eyes. And that's the last time they ever went to that meditation class. They were scared, terrified. Because out of this monk's eyes were two laser beams going into one of the other meditators. Absolutely true. Fair dinkum. He had laser eyes. How cool can that be? Weird stuff. But it happens. So if you want to think outside the box and see outside the box, how about getting into the meditation and developing laser eyes? Real ones which other people can see. Beams of light coming out of each eye. That's cool. And that's actually, honestly, that's totally true. Happened. And that guy's passed away now, but I know that guy, that monk. Really powerful monk. Weird stuff. Yes?
Do you have any powers?
I have the power of saying, no, I'm not telling you. I do have the power of flying through the air. That's how I came to Melbourne from Perth. Virgin Airlines. You know why monks fly Virgin Airlines? Because, no, we're monks. It's the proper airline to fly. Celibates. And you wouldn't fly sexy airlines, would you? Right? So you fly Virgin Airlines, not sexy airlines. Okay, come on, let's get another question, otherwise we're going to finish off. What time are we supposed to finish off anyway? 5 o'clock?
5:15.
5:15. Yeah. So, what? Are you afraid of anything? How many of you have seen a ghost? How many of you have heard a ghost? Hey, two. Excellent. That's pretty par for the course. I ask people, and yeah, they have seen a ghost. How many of you would be afraid if you actually heard or saw a ghost? Would you be? Why? A ghost has never harmed a human being, ever. Ooh, that's a ghost running away. Because one of the... Yeah. Can't tell a ghost story. Is it bad?
I like your ghost stories.
Yeah.
I
got 15 minutes meditation. What would you rather have, meditation or ghost story? I thought that was going to be the case. Because when I went to Cambridge, I'm not only a theoretical physicist, but I also joined the Buddhist Society at that university. And the other society I joined was a psychic research society. And that was actually where I met one of my best friends for life, Professor Bernard Carr. He is Professor of Theoretical Physics at Queen Mary College in London. He was a close disciple of Professor Stephen Hawking, the one in the wheelchair. So close disciple that he was featured in the film of his biography, The Theory of Everything. But he was also one of the great ghost hunters. A top theoretical physicist, we used to go to houses looking for ghosts. Ghost hunting. I thought that was really cool to try and find a ghost. But this was a story somebody told me. It was an Australian woman, from Western Australia. She was on holiday in England. And while she was on holiday, like most tourists do, they go and see these old castles. And some of these castles are 600, 700, 800 years old. And in all those years, many really bad, evil things have happened in those castles, especially in the dungeons underneath the castles. And she told me that when she was taken on a tour of the dungeons, it was so scary, really spooky. Even the floorboards, and the same as the doors, every time these really big solid doors open. And even when they passed the window, the wind would... It was the scariest time of her life. And she couldn't wait for the tour to be completed. And when it was, when she came up, she was so, I made it. But she couldn't help but ask the tour guide, have you ever seen, are there any ghosts in this castle? And the guide said, in all the years I've lived in this castle, I've never ever seen a ghost, not one. And this Australian woman said, how long have you lived in this castle? And the guide said, over 300 years. it was a ghost. So be careful of people who take you on a tour of old English castles. Okay, let's do some bit of meditation, otherwise I get in trouble with your parents. Okay, so just, you don't have to change what you said, just as you are. It's only 10 minutes. Very, very quick. Close your eyes. And be aware of your body. How are you sitting? If you want to fidget, fidget now. If you want to scratch, scratch now. Don't need to turn on the lights, it doesn't matter. And imagine coming right inside of yourself, inside your body. There we go. That's bringing your attention to the present moment. Why do I have a microphone on when I burp? How does your body feel right now? See if you can relax the body. Relax it as much as you can. Can you feel any tight pieces of flesh in your body? Muscles which are sore, headaches, any other aches. See if you can focus on those feelings in your body. The most irritating feeling. Focus on it. And see if you can will it to relax. Relax, relax, relax. Sometimes your body is like a rubber band stretched on both ends. And you very slowly let go on both ends. So the rubber is not stretched anymore. It's loose and natural and free. That's your body. Not being pulled or pushed or squashed. Everything open and free. Just by being mindful of your body, you can learn how to relax it so well. And once you've relaxed your body, now see if you can relax your mind. Ask yourself how peaceful or how agitated are you? Give it a number from 1 to 10. 1 means you're really peaceful. 10 means you're very agitated, very restless. Give that a number. From 1 to 10. It doesn't matter what number that is, because this is a trick to get you to be aware of what I call the peaceometer. That indicator inside of you which shows you how peaceful or how disturbed is your mind. How peaceful are you? Once you are mindful of how peaceful or how agitated you are, it's pretty simple to learn how to be more and more peaceful. What relaxes you? What disturbs you? What attitude of mind? Letting go, kindness, opening the door of your heart to this moment. If you have like the irritation of a cold, just focus on the cold, the irritation in your nose. And find out what makes it worse, what makes it better. Mindfulness gives you the opportunity to learn and understand the nature of the body or the nature of the mind. If you haven't got the cold, Imagine you are a Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree. Imagine what it must feel like. This is called role playing, like an actor. Imagine you're a Buddha sitting peacefully with nothing, no work to do, nothing more to achieve, a Buddha perfectly content. Imagine that, however much you can. Free, peaceful, wise and kind. Imagine what that must feel like. And how joyful that must be. Straight away, you've got this huge boost in meditation. Got a head start. And be mindful of that peace and that happiness. A special type of happiness. Subtle, but real. And just let your attention stay with peace. As you relax and calm down more and more, see if you can start focusing on your breathing. As you breathe in, imagine breathing in peace, breathing in health and energy. And as you breathe out the cold, the sickness, breathe it out with every out-breath. Breathe in health and energy. Breathe out, let go. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Let go of all the past and all the future. Just this moment, that's all you have. And in this moment, breathe in peace. Breathe out. Let go. Now we're going to finish in a very short time. But before you open your eyes, I want to invite you to ask yourself how you feel. How has this very short meditation affected your body? Do you feel more relaxed? How has it affected your mind? Can you taste and feel the peace? How enjoyable is it? Be quiet and peaceful. So you can now all open your eyes to finish the meditation. Very good. Okay. So I tried my best to entertain you a little bit with a couple of jokes. Ghost story. There's some other interesting facts like the laser-eyed monk. Unbelievable, but true. So much of my life I've seen stuff which is weird, but true. Anyway, it's now 5:15. You've got to go to dinner. You're having dinner tonight? Are you going to be like me? And have nothing? Okay. Very good. So take care, everybody. All the best. Have fun. Okay. This is my invention. This is me chanting outside the box. So please follow me. Sadhu. Sadhu. Sadhu!